Kansas Fest, the Apple II convention I've had the pleasure of going to for many years, has a problem. There's an airport near where it's held, but not really near. More like 30 or 40 miles, quite a trip going down a major highway. So for years, there was an organized trip sharing service called Pickoff and Dropoff, which was designed to allow people to sign up to be volunteer taxis, pick up groups of people at the airport, and then drive them to the location. One year I had a rental car, so I signed up, feeling pretty good about doing my part, and I got notification that an attendee, who I didn't know well, was going to be at the airport. The airport for Kansas City is very small, so it wasn't so hard to find him waiting at the side of the curb. I picked him up, and off we were. As I took this new attendee back to Kansas Fest, I started talking to him about some of the great things we were going to do and welcoming him to this great experience. And somewhere around 10 or 15 minutes in, he asked a few key questions about my introduction, and that was how I found out I kidnapped somebody. This episode is Blunders and Mistakes. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. On the Internet Archive command line tool, I manipulate thousands of files in a given day, many times automatically, based on various criteria and search terms. Occasionally, I make a mistake here or there, people let me know about it, and I undo the damage. But one day, we started to get lots of complaints about the fact that very old audio files and files that were buried in collections I would never touch had all been moved to one of my collections, and I was stumped. After some investigation, I found that this was the case. Many, many files from all over the Internet Archive had come together to my high-fidelity set, which was intended to be high-quality audio recordings from the main open collections, and nowhere else. In fact, it appeared it had come from every collection possible. And, after applying some pattern matching and recognition, I determined they all had one thing in common. They all mentioned, consisted of, or were part of, the work of Frank Zappa. It turned out that a minor bug had occurred somewhere in the search engine, and restrictions under some conditions had disappeared, so that instead of searching in just the current collection for Frank Zappa, I was searching in every collection, and moving all these items around together without any regard for where they had been. Soon I found that my high-fidelity collection had thousands of Frank Zappa works. Works by the man himself, works referencing him, cover performances, books and pamphlets and movie posters all mentioning Frank Zappa. Until eventually, overnight, the pile had assembled to the point that everybody was noticing. Thank goodness the structure of the archive keeps track of where things used to be, and within an evening, I had returned all of the wayward Zappas back where they belong. I'll only say that while it wasn't exactly my fault that this happened, it did give me an opportunity to understand more about how much of a width and breadth there is at the Internet Archive, because there were so many unique albums and performances living in the nooks and crannies of the archive stacks that inspired me later to find homes for and to understand how great our performance collection is. There's a set of music at the archive called the Recordings of Independent Origin, which is a chalice overflowing with live performances taped off the radio, concerts, and even off-the-soundboard creations from 40 or even 50 years ago. Even if Frank Zappa isn't your bag, and why not, you will find plenty else to enjoy. In an earlier episode, I talked about my time at HarvardNet, and there was one small event that I didn't feel would fit into the theme of what I was talking about. But let's go there. One of our customers wanted to fix a broken RAID setup. A RAID setup, in this case, were two drives that had the same information on them, mirrored, so that if one got sick or stopped working, it could be replaced without the machine losing any data. Before what we think of as the modern era of disk storage, where you can just pull a drive out while it's running, have the system heal around it, then put a replacement in and have it all work, the particular system I was working with for this customer needed downtime. And this was one of those customers where their actual bosses did not appreciate downtime. That said, they only had one machine to do the work they were doing, and so they had to schedule downtime. The time they scheduled? 4 a.m. local. I was assigned to do this work, and I was also on call. As luck would have it, I got several calls that night, 11 p.m., 1 a.m., and each time I tried, as best as I could, to go back to sleep. But by the time I got there, around 3:30, I was a wreck. I should not have been operating a car, much less trying to do any sort of technical process that had data dependent on it. In that cold, sterile data center, I can't imagine what I looked like to these two people. Rumpled, fuzzy, half-shaven, basically like I had rolled out of bed, which was exactly what I had done, and here I was going to operate on their most precious heart of their organization. I'll jump ahead and just tell you, it all went fine. None of the data was lost. They made multiple calls to headquarters. Headquarters seemed like the kind of headquarters you didn't want to make sad, and we didn't make them sad. But there was one moment that I'll always remember. You see, you had to unplug a drive, execute commands, plug a drive in again, execute commands, and then move another drive. It was a little bit complicated, and I was moving through it at the speed of molasses, because I was barely awake. I had been up too long, I had done too many stressful things, and these two people, who did not understand the technology of what I was doing, were not happy watching me go. And as I worked through this complicated multi-step process, pausing for a minute or two to let everything settle, there was one moment when I was saying everything I was doing out loud, just to hear myself do it. And then, at a particular crucial moment, I said to myself to verify that something had been done. And one of the two people watching me said, "Oh, you definitely did it. You can keep going." And I locked eyes with him, and, as seriously as I could, I said, "I know you think so, and I'm sure you're right, but I could be dreaming this right now, and I want to be sure." Time has not blurred the look on his face, the frozen, saucer-like eyes of somebody who realizes that he has entrusted the heart of a business run by people who are not appreciative of anything going wrong into the hands of a maniac. The bleariness with which I looked at him, the distant, vacant look of somebody who had not gotten enough sleep, reminds me of another situation where I was in the opposite seat. I was at a party where I had my Checker Marathon taxicab, which was, and always had been, a little finicky. It was a good party, hosted by a lovely couple, and I remember, over time, people leafing away, until finally, around midnight, I decided it was time for me to go. And I went to my car and discovered it had one of its typical problems. Perhaps it was something involving spark plugs or the engine not making connections, but the car, it appeared, was not going to go anywhere. So, sheepishly, I went back to the front door and rang the doorbell, and the host was there, and I asked if it was okay if I slept on the couch for the night. And he had a look on his face I did not expect, and he came outside to the porch He asked me, in whispered tones, if I remembered one or two of the new attendees at the party, especially some who hadn't left yet. And I said yes. And he said, "Well, Jason, you know, under any other circumstance, you'd be welcome here. But not everybody is sleeping where they normally would be sleeping tonight. I kinda need the house." And instantly, some sort of internal code, some switch in me, clicked off, and I understood. And even though I was now staring down the barrel of a night of pain, I said, "I gotcha." So I went back to my car and I called AAA. For my friends from other countries, I'll tell you, AAA is a way that you can call in a tow truck. It's part of a membership that you pay for by the year. And it goes to a number of member towing companies and mechanics, which will come and get you no matter what. If they refuse, they lose that contract, which is extremely lucrative for them. So you can be assured they'll make any kind of sacrifice to get there. In my case, a clearly tired person called me back on my cell phone, asked me where I was, and came out. There were two people in that tow truck, one of whom was a truck operator, and the other clearly was not anything. The operator looked at my car, tried to start it, agreed there was a problem here, and a mechanic was going to have to look at it, and then said he'd have to tow it back to my house. They hooked up the vehicle, we all loaded into the cab of the tow truck, and started on our way. And I'm not sure when it really occurred to me first, but after a while, I determined two facts. First of all, the tow truck operator should not have been driving. Whatever state he was in, it wasn't this one. And his companion, who potentially could have driven, was just in no shape either. It was me and two people who were absolutely ill-qualified to be driving, heading home. I think I asked if I could possibly become the driver, and he told me that would be a bridge too far, and that he could find his way to my house, quote-unquote, by feel. I entered into that twilight zone where you start making weird calculations about your safety versus convenience versus how bad is it really, not really putting into the equation how you're going to explain this to authorities in any case of things going wrong. He was in bad shape, but as we loaded on to Interstate 95, we found a solution. It turned out that he had his radio presets set to a number of rock and metal stations, and when he turned his radio, it started blasting hard rock. Top 40 hard rock. Songs anybody would know. Major rotation on the radio when they first came out. Popular as anything. And that's what saved me. Because all three of us started singing at the top of our lungs, every song that went by. Van Halen, Aerosmith, AC/DC, whatever they had, we were singing. Blasting with the windows down, driving, thankfully, in the non-passing lane, and making it safely home, the sounds of our terrible warbling echoing throughout the night. These are just some of the mistakes that I've made in my life. As I stand here, I realize where things could have turned left instead of right, where a calculated risk turned out to be all of the marbles, and where I, for one brief shining moment, could have turned myself from the present tense to a distant, beloved memory. That's the nature of life. We often don't recognize what we put ourselves through and what our bad decision-making leads to. Until it's too late. But at least I know what my final thoughts would be if things didn't work out. Because one time I was working in a data center that had a ramp that led to the exit, and there was a very large cart full of all sorts of parts and wiring, and I was pulling it alone, not pushing it. And as I backed onto the ramp with this hundreds of pounds wheeled machine with no brakes, I realized it was starting to move without me, and I was backing up more and more down this ramp, shuffling, pushing, trying to stop the inevitable. And as I moved towards the doors, I realized in that moment that this cart was going to crush me. I moved into an odd position, pressed my feet against the door behind me in the nick of time, pressed with all of my might, and instead of a terrible crushing crash, there was a bump, a movement, and the cart stopped. So I'm fairly confident what brilliant last thoughts would run through my mind in the case of catastrophe, and that would be, oh well, that life was fun. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Matt Reynolds, Manxalot, Sean Kelly, Dileep Reddy, Trixie the Cat, John Sturm, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Nobody gets it right, but if you're lucky, if the tides turn in your favor, you can at least get out of the way.